Welcome back, and joining me now for a closer look at the day's markets action is Imtiaz Suleiman from Sentio Capital. Imtiaz, I'm going to keep you hanging for just a bit because I want to take a look at some commentary that we've received from our Bloomberg colleagues, because Powell finally responded to rising inflation concerns, saying that the Fed would consider removing its pandemic support at a faster rate than initially expected. So let's take a look at what analysts have had to say about this hawkish stance, because it's helped set the tone for today. Trading day.
It's interesting timing. I think that everyone's been waiting for some form of reaction to the inflation data that has been persisting for quite a period of time now, and watching very closely the reaction function, if you like, of central banks and when they start to respond. So I think on one hand, it's not a surprise given what the data has been doing, but in light of the recent news flow around the new variant and the COVID situation, I think that's what markets are really grappling with in terms of what that means for the outlook from here.
Well, speaking of that, what really caught my eye yesterday was a note that Tom Porcelli over at RBC sent out talking about Powell, saying, and let me read this quote to you and get your take on it. He says that Powell should have been expressing his current level of worry about inflation many, many months ago. He's doing this all backwards. He made a real mess of the entire conversation, which certainly has not instilled confidence. And he says, actually, worse than that, he no doubt played a role in these sharply rising inflation expectations. What's your take?
That's quite a summary of the view. I think a lot of that is fair in the sense of central banks generally have taken quite a long time to respond to this combination of data that we've seen. And there was a lot of commentary a little while ago of, you know, if not now, when do central banks respond, given the growth backdrop and also that inflation backdrop, which was changing pretty rapidly. Set aside against that is that, you know, the pandemic was very much imposed upon the global economic system. So I think there are hangovers, if you like, from the previous cycle, if that's the right word, that central banks, again, are having to be quite mindful of in terms of how quickly they can tighten policy and how fragile the economic system is and hostage to that low rate environment. So I think that's almost dominated. And then suddenly we've had quite a shift from some central banks in terms of responding. So it's quite a change. And I think credibility, you know, is at risk a little bit now as people try and work out what this guidance means.
That was Georgina Taylor from Invesco Asset Management. MTS, I'm going to bring you into the conversation now, because like I say, this is what's dominated a lot of the conversation that we have been having through today's trading session, with a focus on the Fed, the stance that it adopted, and the stance it's now shifting to. What are you making of it all?
Yeah, thanks, Alicia. I think if you look at it from the market perspective, you know, from a market perspective, it looks like tapering was very much priced in. Jay Powell just confirmed that. I think if you look at his past track record, he's always reacted to big market moves. If you look back in 2018, the market almost fell 20%. He pulled back his rhetoric in terms of rate hikes. So I think the market is taking the stance that the Fed is still going to be very accommodative, and monetary policy is very loose on the whole. So if you look at it, you know, inflation is running quite high in the US and in the rest of the world, and the Fed as it stands is still very accommodative. So we still have some time to go before the tapering ends, and then from there, sometime before rate hikes actually start increasing in the US. Yeah. So from a market environment perspective, liquidity is abundant, and that bodes well for stocks in general.
Do you think, though, that this easy monetary policy stance could well come back to bite? Because we have been up to this point been talking about inflation as being transitory, and now that reality is very different.
Yeah, I think what would be very concerning for the market is if rate hikes happen in very quick succession. So if rate hikes increase gradually, the market will be able to absorb that. And it also shows confidence in terms of better economic growth. But you know, if the inflation scenario plans out to be persistent, and we haven't seen signs of, you know, inflation expectations becoming unanchored in terms of the long-term view. If once we see that becoming unanchored, that would be a big red flag, and that would necessitate a faster rate hikes, and that would be very negative from a market perspective. So I think from a Fed policy, you know, they're still looking for employment to be broad-based and inclusive, and they're going to be quite patient in my view.
Yeah. How then do you, or what then do you make of our own, you know, South African Reserve Bank's positioning? Was that response with the rate hike when we saw it come through earlier this month very much apt given the scenario, especially when you're looking at inflation becoming more problematic than many thought it would? We've got, yes, the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy saying that it made a mistake in the calculation of the increase of the petrol price, but whether you're looking at 81 cents or 75 cents, MTS, nothing to scoff at there, and that is going to start to have inflationary impact as we progress.
Yeah, I think from our own Reserve Bank, they were on the front foot, and it's, you know, it just confirms that they did the right thing. If you look at some of the other emerging market players out there, they've also raised rates. Turkey is going in the opposite direction, and we're seeing what impact that is having on their currency. So I think inflationary pressures are certainly towards the upside. The SARB took a view of being on the front foot, and you know it was the correct move. I think if you look at it from our perspective, inflation expectations are still towards that midpoint of the inflation target band of around 4.5%. So it's pretty much in line. The problem we have in South Africa is it's very much supply side inflation. You know, if you look at demand, it's still not roaring as we see in the rest of the world. So electricity prices, administered prices, fuel, as you mentioned, those are adding inflationary pressures, which is coming from a supply side perspective.
Yeah, and with that, the Reserve Bank has to be mindful of how fast it can actually increase the rates when it needs to without hindering any growth. Growth has been a focal point for companies. We've had Emira vocalize some of its concerns, saying that it needs growth to be the catalyst for change and in order to improve any business confidence. How worried are you by the fact that we've seen Emira report vacancy is that its office portfolio shoot up over 19% in the 4 months to the end of October?
Yeah, I think if you look at it from all of the property companies' perspective, the office segment is the segment that has taken the most pressure. Vacancies are high and continue to trend higher. And that speaks to the tough economic environment that I spoke to. So, you know, rental reversions are quite negative. And if you look at the environment that we're in, you know, there's more companies that are embracing the hybrid model of work from home, which necessitates less space and less requirements from that perspective. So I think for the vacancies to be absorbed in the office space, we're going to need to see GDP growth of at least 3-5% going forward.
Yeah. So that was one of the worry spots as far as company announcements or news that came through today is concerned. Looking at a bright spot on the other side of the coin, MTS Bidcorp getting its new financial year off to a good start. It's saying that it's booked record trading results for its first quarter. It's been gaining market share. Its emerging markets division, which includes South Africa, has performed well. It's seen sales coming in above pre-pandemic levels. I mean, this is all that you want to hear from a company, right? But are you questioning sustainability at this point, given what we could potentially see in terms of a fourth wave?
I think from a Bidcorp perspective, it just speaks to the quality of management in place in a tough environment. Although you had lockdowns that are quite severe in some of the jurisdictions that they do play in, for example, Australia, they still managed to gain close to pre-COVID levels. So that the environment has been changing. They've got a strong balance sheet. They've managed to take some market share from the smaller players, which have fallen to the wayside as we've seen this economic pressures take hold. And then if you look at it from an operating perspective, you know, they've managed the cost base very well. And revenue was ahead of the cost base, which allowed them to expand their gross margins. So I think from an overall perspective, you know, Europe, although it relies a lot on tourism, there's a lot of staycations happening, and that's helping them from their perspective. So it speaks to, again, a well-run company with a strong balance sheet, taking market share in a tough environment.
Yeah, well, talking about opportunity to be found in emerging markets, domestic issues as regulatory concerns and a spillover in the real estate sector might have weighed on Chinese stocks, but some analysts seeing this as a potential buying opportunity. Here's more on that before we get MTS's view.
Well, it's obviously going to be slower growth than we're used to in China, but I think it's still going to be more growth than we're going to get in a lot of other areas of the world. China has some fabulous companies, both onshore and offshore. Some of them have been rather through the ringer over the past few months, but nevertheless, you have fabulous companies. Some interesting prices of Chinese debt as well within the market. So yes, China does look interesting, but both an equity and a debt perspective. And obviously, we've seen sell-offs in some areas, particularly the debt market, following some of the problems in the real estate market. So there are opportunities. Obviously, the policy in China, the zero COVID policy, is different to that being pursued by many other parts of the world, and has caused some of the bottlenecks that we've seen that have touched us all. So how that policy develops will have big implications for the broader Chinese economy. But certainly looking at the prices of some of the assets there, both equity and debt, it obviously has a place in portfolios.
Yeah, where in the debt market are you finding value, and perhaps one that isn't a value trap? Because we have seen high-yield debt in Asia, for example, sell off about 11% so far this year. And as you say, a lot of concerns and jitters around the property market.
Yeah, probably, to be fair, and maybe it's fright on our part rather than anything else, but probably away from some of the core real estate markets. There has been undoubtedly a contagion across the Asian debt markets, which has been driven by what we've seen at Evergrande and the other Chinese real estate companies, and that has transferred to the non-real estate sectors as well. So probably areas away from real estate, but there does look like there's good value there and good covenants and good prospects for some of the companies issuing away from the real estate sector.
That was the head of multi-asset research at Aberdeen, Richard Dunbar. MTS, do you share that sentiment? I mean, how much value do you see in the Chinese market right now, given some of the risks that prevail?
I think you have to be very selective. If you align yourself with the Chinese five-year plan, which is to have made in China by 2025, and then secondly, to be carbon net neutral by 2050. Those companies that play into the theme of renewable energy, the ESG theme, those should benefit. From a tech regulatory perspective, it's still very uncertain in our view. We're seeing news come out daily that's headwinds for the tech sector. But I think overall, the biggest concern for us would be the property market in China. Because if you look at property, it makes up about 30% of Chinese GDP. Mm-hmm. And going back, looking at other countries that have gone through big booms and busts in terms of the property cycle, 30% is unsustainable. And the Chinese have been pulling back in terms of their stimulus programs for property. So I think that's going to be some headwind coming from that sector. The transition from a capital perspective to a services-led economy, again, will benefit domestic Chinese names that play into the theme of a consumer and also to a better environmental perspective.
Okay, so that's some of your views on that market. Where does your stock pick emanate from, MTS?
Yeah, I'm going to choose Mr. Price. Mr. Price is a value retailer. Value is very in vogue in this current tough economic environment, but they've also done very well in terms of building out some of the other franchises. They've made two recent acquisitions. The one is Power Fashions. The other one is Yuppie Chef. They've got a very good, solid balance sheet. And I think the potential for higher special dividends and share buybacks is very likely. And they will continue to gain market share, in this environment. And then the sports, which is a very exciting segment in their portfolio. The athleisure theme has been gaining popularity. And I think they're well placed to benefit from the athleisure trend going forward as well.
I must say, you're not alone in that camp, Mr. Price. Very much in vogue amongst our market watchers over the last couple of weeks, MTS. We're going to have to keep an eye on it. Of course, it trading fourth best performer on the top 40 index today, 4% to the good. Let's leave it there for now. Thanks so much for your time. Of course, MTS Suleiman is with Centio Capital.